Planning. Introduction. Gary Kasparov, the former world chess champion, is said to have claimed that it is better to have a bad plan than no plan when setting out in a chess match. In web development and most of life, it's better to have a good plan, even if getting to that good plan takes a little work. Is there anything worse than spending 6 hours crafting a carefully designed web page only to realize that you've forgotten a key detail that will mean you have to redo pretty much everything? Why planning matters. Careful planning is critical for other components of the web development process too. Identifying client expectations, clarifying feature requests and project scope, setting up a realistic schedule with clear priorities, avoiding software bugs, scope creep, and resource problems. Let's take a look at a way to plan a website. This is not the only planning method. In fact, your methods will evolve according to your work habits and preferences, and also according to project demands. If you're working with a web development team, then team members will have input based upon what they need during a development process. Get planning. The plan we consider here, though basic, will outline a few key considerations. 1. Create a statement of purpose. 2. Gather requirements. 3. Design the site's content and navigation. 4. Create wireframes. 5. Create a design. 6. Code, test, iterate. 7. Deliver. Let's take a look at the first two items on this list. Statement of purpose. A statement of purpose is going to be a well-written, comprehensive statement that very clearly describes the following. Users. This will refer to all of the potential users, including any administrators, their users too. You'll need to understand who will be using this site in order to design content and appropriate functionality for their needs. Content. What is this site supposed to deliver and or do? This will include descriptions of all of the different kinds of content that will be available, as well as a complete overview of the site's functionality, especially if the site does anything like allow a user to search through a database or upload data, like images. Conversion plan. Successful interactions are called conversions in the marketing world. What constitutes a conversion? Is this site selling something? If so, then a conversion might mean a completed sale. Other conversions might mean getting a user to supply an email address or sign up for a webinar. If the site in question is meant to supply information, then a conversion might mean getting a user to do a successful search and then click on a relevant search result. Here, you'll define what conversions mean and provide some ideas about how the site will make those conversions happen. Gathering requirements. Requirements gathering is an absolutely critical component of the planning process. Basically, anything the client expects the site to do is a requirement. Requirements gathering is the practice of gathering all of those expectations into a document as comprehensively as possible. This helps you to identify any risks you might face in the process because you have laid out all expectations early on. Clients may themselves not be very clear on what they want and may not realize that what they want entails a bunch of other requirements. For example, let's say you're sitting there with your client and they say, "I want a shopping cart." You're going to want to press a bit in order to make sure that what you're thinking of as a shopping cart is the same thing as the client's idea. Does the client mean that they just want to be able to add a product to the cart and then purchase it? Or will they have to accommodate, for example, returns or shipping costs or a product's various options? What happens if a user fills up their cart but then doesn't complete the sale within a certain amount of time? Should that cart be saved or deleted? These are all separate things that require planning, programming, testing, and revision. Making an assumption about what your client wants might take you in the wrong direction, and then redirecting your work to suit their needs will cost time and money. These are risks you want to avoid or work through sooner rather than later in the process. Some clients will know that they need to be precise. Other clients won't necessarily understand as much through no fault of their own, and you'll have to explain things, sometimes very carefully and gently. A requirements document will then be developed and document all of the project's requirements. This document will be used to create project milestones and deliverables, These are when a client signs off on certain stages of the project, agreeing that the requirements at that stage have been fulfilled. Designers and developers may be consulted too, to make sure that everything the client wants is achievable within their budget. Sometimes clever workarounds or adaptations will be worked out in order to satisfy a client's needs while keeping the budget stable. Use a form to your advantage. One way to facilitate good requirements gathering is to develop a form that consistently addresses the range of expectations related to a web project while conforming to your own or your team's workflow. Such a form, to be completed along with the client and key members of a development team, might include the following elements. Mission statement. This is the statement of purpose, but it is brought into the requirements gathering process in order to facilitate discussion and to keep everybody on the same page when thinking about what's necessary for the site. Domain names. You might need more than one, and some sites might have different subdomains for different use cases. For example, you might have your business's main site, listing services, and marketing info at example.com. Then you might have your business's blog at blog.example.com, and a store that sells your products or services at store.example.com. For business reasons and search optimization reasons, you'll want to plan your domain structure carefully. We'll talk more about this in a moment, but the main thing to remember is that domain names become identified with the site's branding and the site's content. They're an integral part of the URL, and URLs should, as much as possible, relate to a page's content in an intuitive way so that users have an easier experience finding what they're after. Site design. Are there any examples for inspiration? Are there any must-have design features? What about the creation or utilization of existing design elements? Does this business already have a business ID that includes a logo, a color scheme, and any other necessary design elements, or do these things need to be created? Features. What must the site be able to do? Are there any existing examples that can be used for comparison? Be very specific here. This is where any and all ambiguities, definitions, and possible leave-outs will be cleared up. This document needs to cover everything the client wants. If it doesn't do this, then there might be conflicts or confrontations down the road, and they might not be the client's fault. Content design. How will information be delivered? How can content be organized in order to ensure that a user will find the right content in the most optimal way? How can the site's navigation be optimized for simplicity and efficiency, while ensuring that the experience is pleasurable, however that might translate given the site's purpose for the user? How should the site's content and page organization be optimized in order to deliver the best results for SEO, search engine optimization? Infrastructure. What kind of infrastructure, web servers, server software, database servers and software, mail servers, bandwidth, and so on, will be required in order to effectively serve the anticipated user base? This isn't strictly an infrastructure consideration, but given infrastructure costs, how can the site be optimized in order to achieve the most bang for the buck? Premature optimization isn't a great idea, but giving some thought to sound web design principles can help manage costs both early in the process and later too when the site is growing. For many sites, making decisions in these categories will be so straightforward that planning will almost seem like an exaggeration. Small sites running a content management system, like WordPress, for example, may have audiences that are initially very small as websites go, and decisions about infrastructure are easy. But for larger sites or challenging web applications, planning is absolutely crucial in order to deliver worthwhile results. Again, this is an initial guide. Depending upon how you work, your clients' needs, and the kinds of web development you're doing, your experiences will vary. But this isn't a step you can ever skip, or for that matter, overemphasize. You want to know as much as you can going in, and as your software career progresses, you will at times be surprised at how challenging it can be to get the best information. Design content and navigation. As you design a website, put your users first. A good website isn't your idea of what a good website is. A good website is your user's idea of what a good website is, based upon how the site addresses their needs. Information architecture is the practice of classifying and organizing a website's content so that a website's purpose is made to align with a user's needs. Content, in this case, is everything a user will encounter on a website: page titles, headers, site copy, the site's written text, links, images, multimedia assets, dynamic content, such as what's derived from a database query, and so on. This includes everything from a description of a product to a site's privacy policy and copyright notices. Good information architecture means that information is organized so that it will be easy to find with minimal interaction with the user interface, navigation, database filters, etc. The site's URLs will be designed too so that there's an easy-to-understand correlation between how the URL is constructed and the information that is being sought. Multiple paths will be provided to information resources in order to accommodate different ways that users might be thinking about the information. If all of this is done well, the site will seem very natural, and the work of structuring the information will be completely invisible to the user. When information is well structured and correctly categorized, search engines will have an easier time understanding the information's relevance to potential searches, and the site's search engine results will become more prominent. Well-executed information architecture also has the very intentional effect of making your site more popular. People usually like what comes naturally to them. Planning information architecture. Information architecture will generally follow a few steps and will involve a few tools, like content maps and wireframes. Let's take a look at the usual steps, though remember, there may be more, fewer, or different steps depending upon your client and the site's context. Understand the site's purpose. What is the site trying to accomplish? What constitutes a conversion? Who are your competitors, and how might you distinguish yourself from them? Most of these ideas are marketing considerations, but they're very important for the site's success. Create user profiles. Know who your users are and the kinds of information they're expecting to find on your site. This means understanding the subject matter from the user's point of view. Concepts that are novel to newcomers in a given context may be of little interest to experienced users. You'll need to decide if considerations like this matter, and if they do, how this might affect what users will be looking for, or how information might need to be structured in multiple ways in order to serve different viewpoints. Organize content according to user need. Which content assets, descriptions, images, how-tos, links, schedules, are suitable for which users? Make an inventory of all content and then think about how users with different levels of experience or viewpoints will look for that information. Obviously, these kinds of decisions will benefit from interviews, research, and testing, which may or may not be possible depending upon the project's scope and budget. Create the information architecture. Various tools are used for this, including content maps, site maps, and wireframes. We'll take a look at these in a moment. Create the site's navigation. Now that you know how you want to organize your information, designers and developers will work together to create a navigational scheme that successfully translates the information architecture into navigational elements on the site. Organization and creation tools. There are some tools that are typically used during the creation stages of information architecture, such as sitemaps, content maps, and storyboarding. Sitemaps are just textual lists that specify pages and their relationships. These specifications are then submitted to a search engine like Google in order to help Google understand the site. Content maps represent the relationships visually. Often the terms sitemap and content map are used interchangeably to refer to a content map. Storyboarding typically refers to the process of creating a sitemap or content map that visually demonstrates the relationships between pages, content, and links. Example situation. Let's say you've been hired to create a site that sells handcrafted, soft but durable dog toys shaped like fun characters. They're called Mutt Monsters. How do you work through this information architecture process? Step 1. Understand the site's purpose. One basic purpose is to sell Mutt Monsters toys. We can consider that a primary goal. But a part of that goal involves informing our users about our toys and becoming a pup entertainment authority. So another purpose is to provide authoritative information about dog health, mental stimulation, and being good pals to our pup friends. This leads directly to step two. Step two, create user profiles. Let's start thinking about some requirements from the user's perspective. Who are your users? Well, they're dog owners. They probably know their dogs pretty well and have a solid idea of what their dogs will like. They also likely have a general interest in dogs and dog-related content, like dog health and diet. These are enthusiasts. They're not just going to a big chain store and grabbing a toy that their dog might enjoy. They're going to a site for handcrafted dog toys. They like the idea that their dog is getting something that's made with care and some attention to detail. Because of this, they'll probably be interested in the process of how the toys are made and maybe some information about the maker. They'll want to know that the toys are safe too. Finally, because these users are willing and wanting to spend some disposable income on their pups, they might be interested in related content, like information about dog-friendly hikes or outings, which will give the site's owner an opportunity to create profitable relationships with other businesses. Step 3. Organize content according to user need. Now that we have some idea about our users, let's take a look at how we can use this information to create a content map. This is a pretty good beginning. This content map, which is also called a global sitemap, is a broad visual representation of our site's content and the relationship between the pages. Do we have everything represented here? We've got a homepage, and we're already aligning some of our knowledge about our users with the site's main goal, to sell toys. We introduce the user right away to what makes MuttMasters different. Handcrafted, but also safe. Our users care about their pups. We have a separate page for our partner links, which are presented along with helpful content that reinforces our own interest in dogs. There's a blog for health, diet, and general info that will help show our toys in action. We also have some pages that need to be designed for search results and individual blog posts and products. An About Us page communicates our process, though maybe that's still too buried. Maybe that's something we should put on the homepage. Again, this is a good beginning, but it's just a beginning. Content design is a continual process, and later when we check our web logs, we'll see what's getting the most attention and which links are being clicked most often, and we'll be able to refine our site in order to make it more effective. Step 4. Create the information architecture. Once we have a content map that's starting to look reasonable, we can start to create wireframes. Wireframes are diagrams of how information will be presented on a page. They allow us to demonstrate how content should be presented and to indicate all of the content that should be available on any particular page. A wireframe can then be handed both to designers and developers who will understand how the page is supposed to work and what elements need to be designed. For example, a wireframe for the homepage might start out as something like this. Again, this is just a beginning, but we can start to see what's needed to get started. This isn't a design. It's only a representation of the content that the page will have and a rough way that it might be laid out. As with everything in web development, this will evolve according to designer and developer input, competitive evaluation, marketing, and client input. Once a stable wireframe is created and designers have a crack at it, they'll generate more complete design comps with colors and graphical elements. Comp stands for comprehensive, and comps usually demonstrate layout ideas. A wireframe is a very minimal comp. More advanced comps will include ideas for color, logos, typography, and more. At this point, the process continues with steps 5, 6, and 7, design, coding, and delivering project milestones. We're handling those other parts of this process throughout the course. Let's take a look at project management. Project management. Project management is the job of making sure a project proceeds as smoothly as possible by ensuring that people and resources are well coordinated, communication is clear, and the project scope, its complexity and overall workload, is kept within defined bounds. Project management begins really with the planning stage by ensuring that communication is as clear as possible and that the client and the development team are on the same page with respect to precisely what is being made. It continues into the design phase, where the management now focuses on whether people are completing their deliverables within the set schedule. Let's take a look at the planning that project managers consider before they begin a project. Planning ahead. One of the first parts of project management is planning carefully. Another part of project management is anticipating everything you forgot to plan. Because there are many variables in project management, there are many ways to forget things. This is a good general rule to keep in mind when you're in charge of a web project. There are many responsibilities that managing a web project entails, but here we'll cover four general ideas. Planning and scope. Once a web project is in development, the planning phase begins. Planning includes creating the site's statement of purpose, user profiles, and information architecture, as we have seen, but it also includes a few other things: scheduling, resource allocation, budgeting. Scope refers to the determination of a project's size, complexity, and resource needs. One of a project manager's responsibilities, once the scope has been determined, is to manage scope creep, a gradual increase in a project's complexity due to small complications or expectations that come up over a project's duration. Scheduling and resources. Scheduling is one of the most challenging tasks in project management. Often, special tools, spreadsheets, or scheduling applications are used to keep track of the many people and resource requirements that can have an effect on project scheduling. Scheduling is critical because most clients are going to need their site by a certain date. Depending upon the client, there may or may not be leeway for slippage. Web project managers are typically handling multiple projects, and that means deadlines and resources, developers and designers, will need to be coordinated so that each project gets its due attention. Client relations. No matter how sophisticated your client is, they're going to have needs. They're going to be curious about scheduling, especially, but they're also going to need to be consulted during various parts of the process: design, technical implementation, how a feature is supposed to work, and various acceptances, a stage in project management when a client is asked to approve work so that a project can continue to the next stage. Depending upon the client, client relations might be straightforward and pleasant, and sometimes they will be less so. High-pressure deadlines, scope creep, budgeting issues, and other problems can increase stress levels. A good project manager will learn how to handle clients in many different contexts. Technical issues. Technical management means making sure that the client's expectations are in line with whatever developers are creating. This is a combination of careful requirements gathering, communication, management of client expectations, and understanding of project scope. In short, everything we've outlined so far. But this also includes making sure that the project's technical actors, programmers and user experience designers, for example, clearly understand what needs to happen. Communication is key. This is where clear writing helps, along with an understanding of the technical processes involved with making a website. Project management in the design phase. Once the project really gets rolling and you have a variety of people creating different parts of the project, the project manager moves from identifying potential risks and threats to completing the project in time to monitoring when and where these risks might arise in actuality. A project manager wants each deliverable to be high quality, turned in on time, and under budget. Managing a project so that all three of these things are accomplished all along the way is a huge task. Timelines. Scheduling can be a little like herding cats. You want to get one of your designers together with your client, but your client won't be around till next week. The thing is, that's when they want to see the first demo of their site's navigation. But the programmers can't really do much until they get something from the design team, and the design team has yet to meet to discuss some particular way that the navigation should change according to what the user is doing. One of the keys to avoiding situations like that one, even though those kinds of scenarios aren't uncommon and can be dealt with, is clear communication. Creating a schedule that's published to a shared online calendar at the project's beginning is a normal task. The calendar will be marked with clear milestones that have accompanying deliverables. Deliverables will be sets of completed tasks that are defined at the project's beginning. They're reviewed with the client, approved, and then used as a primary way to track progress. As deliverables are met, they're signed off, any necessary adjustments are made to the schedule, and the project proceeds. One key to good project management is to ensure that those deliverables are realistic while still making the client happy. Again, communication helps here. Detailing for the client the various steps involved with creating their site's components can help them understand that real work is going on. Depending upon the client, they may or may not deeply care, but that's up to them. Care or not, they'll recognize that you're managing a complex set of concerns. Scope. As a project progresses, you'll need to be careful, too, when managing project scope, that is, the size of the project and the range of resources required to produce it. Clients can change their minds about key ideas in the middle of a project. Developers can encounter unexpected technical hurdles, sometimes due to subtle characteristics of a project that were difficult to anticipate at the project's beginning. Lots of things can happen. And then the next thing that can happen is called scope creep. A project scope is the sum of the total work necessary to complete the project. This can be measured in required work hours or as resource allocation or in other ways. The main thing to understand is that it's important to track a project's scope, and this can be challenging. Scope creep is when slowly, gradually, the range of a project's work begins to increase. If scope creep isn't controlled, projects can run over budget, be seriously delayed, or fail altogether. Management techniques. Assuming that all of a project's human resources possess the necessary skills and technical resources, communication remains a primary way to battle scope creep. As with any complicated field, and software project management is a field unto itself, to be sure, professionals have developed advanced management tools and techniques. Kanban. One tool is called Kanban, and it was originally developed as a scheduling system at Toyota. There are different types of Kanban, but they all make use of cards, or often sticky notes, that are set up in columns and are moved around according to various kinds of need or in order to signal progress or movement within a system. In systems where there are many kinds of resources and deliverable tasks, Kanban can be very helpful and will often be implemented either by solo developers or teams with customized rules. Scrum. Scrum is another project management system. In the Scrum system, work is organized in sprints, which are fixed units of time, usually ranging from days to weeks. Specific tasks are assigned to sprints and are tracked with daily stand-up meetings where people review the day's goals. At the end of a sprint, the work is carefully evaluated and adjustments are made for the next sprint. Built into the system are more rules that anticipate risks or setbacks. This connection of daily discipline to flexibility is a real strength of Scrum and is one of the reasons why it's often used in production environments. As you work in the web development world, you'll encounter still more methods of project management that all seek to manage complexity. Most of them are going to be structured forms of communication and accountability. You'll learn what works, but nothing beats a good team of smart listeners. Search engine optimization. Obsessed by a fairy tale, we spend our lives searching for a magic door and a lost kingdom of peace. Eugene O'Neill, Nobel Laureate in Literature. What does that quote have to do with web development? Nothing. But it was very quickly found by doing a search on Google for quotes about searching. Google receives over 63,000 search requests per second on any given day. Aside from the huge technical hurdles involved in handling that kind of traffic, that is an immensely large number of searches, all of which are satisfied nearly instantaneously. Since you want your website to be found quickly and easily, you'll need to employ SEO, or search engine optimization, which includes techniques for making sure that the main topics and ideas on your site get the first hits when users run a search. How do Google and other big search engines like Bing and DuckDuckGo get their information? With spiders. Yes, seriously. Crawlers. Also called spiders, crawlers are programs used by search engines, and some others too who are not necessarily nice, to visit web pages, examine their responses, and parse that information while collecting new links to visit. Search engines run their crawlers 24/7 so that information is as current and relevant as possible. Search engines need their results to be relevant because most search engines make money by selling ads. When you search, it's important to remember that you aren't necessarily going to get the best, truest, newest, or fairest results first. you're going to get the results that are most likely to generate money for the search engine. In order for ads to get clicks, search engines need to be as accurate as they can be when interpreting a query and answering with a list of links. A crawler starts off with an initial list of links to visit. As it visits those links, the crawler finds all of the links on each visited page and visits those too. Along the way, one typical thing for a crawler to do is to perform different kinds of analysis on the web page's text, like taking note of word frequency and the relationships between terms in order to build a sense of what a page is about. Crawlers don't really understand how any particular page is fulfilling a role, but they can add pages to an index that is basically a table of terms and pages that feature those terms. The pages are ranked according to how often those terms appear, or whether the terms are used in headings or in other contexts. Crawlers can be controlled, to an extent, with a file named robots.txt that resides in the root directory of your website. This file contains rules that tell crawlers what they're allowed and not allowed to access. If the crawler is polite, again, not all are, and some will ignore a robots.txt file, then the crawler will examine that file and only index pages allowed by the file's rules. Here's an example rule. In this case, no crawler is allowed to index files in the no crawl directory. Properly constructing a robots.txt file can help optimize search engine results. Algorithms. How a page is ranked is determined by an algorithm. Algorithms are a big deal in computer science. An algorithm is a set of rules or steps that, when followed precisely, produce a desired result, assuming that the algorithm's inputs are correct and that the algorithm itself is correct. The study of algorithms is a large field in computer science because the discovery of effective algorithms, or invention of, depending upon how you think of them, can lead to dramatic advances in many fields. Search engines use indexing algorithms to quickly acquire data from web pages and then index that data. Search algorithms are used then to return a list of relevant search results only milliseconds after a search query is submitted. Keywords. Keywords are specially chosen words or word combinations that are intentionally used throughout a site in order to increase the likelihood that your audience will find you on a search engine. Crawlers index a site's content, and sites that use keywords that are likely to be searched, or which are directly related to words that are searched, will get higher rankings in search results. Keywords should be selected by thinking carefully about the way a site's potential audience thinks and speaks about the site's subject matter. Again, keeping the user in mind is critical. What the user wants and how users talk about what they want will help to determine how words are selected. There are many tools online which will help you research keywords. Google, for example, offers their Keyword Planner tool to give you information on any keywords you're interested in. Using keyword tools, you'll find out how many searches per day occur for a particular keyword, what times of the day those searches take place, how popular certain keywords are with other advertisers, and many more things in addition. There are third-party tools, too, tools that aren't directly affiliated with a major search engine. Most of these tools are free, and there should be no need to spend any money when searching for good keywords and gathering information about keyword demographics. The keywords you settle on might partially depend upon your site's budget. Search engines are tools for advertisers, and most serious competitors will place bids on keywords that ensure their site appears higher on search results when someone does a search. That means you'll want to carefully research keywords in order to determine what will work best for your SEO budget. That said, once you've settled on a set of keywords that you want to use, the next step will be to include them in prominent places in your site's content. Crawlers will assign priority to keywords that appear in the following places: a page's title, the text that appears in the title tag, the actual URL of a page. This can be accomplished just by naming the page with a keyword, a page's text content, page headings and section titles, links. Ranking factors. In addition to finding pages that are relevant to a query, a search algorithm has to rank the page's relevance. More relevant results should be returned first. How a search engine ranks a page has to do with a range of factors. Links to your content. When other sites link to your content, that's a huge plus in your favor. Links help determine relevancy, and many links to a page make search engine algorithms indicate that the page is authoritative. Keywords. Crawlers gather information for indexing algorithms, and those indexers track the words that are related to web pages. The more often that web pages use words that are either matches for or are related to the words used in a search query, the more relevant that page becomes. A page's content is key. Content age. The more often a page is updated, the more relevant the page is likely to be. It's worth noting, too, that the more often a page is updated, the more likely it becomes that other pages will link to it. Generally, it's a good idea to keep pages up to date with fresh information. Loading time. Fast pages are accessed more often, so they tend to be ranked higher than slow pages. Speed is a big deal in a no-wait world, and users are often spoiled. They want information now. Device-friendly pages. These days, mobile devices are used more often than desktop computers, and search engines know this. Sites that aren't responsive and appropriately optimized for mobile consumption are therefore less likely to be accessed by mobile devices, and so they're less relevant. Code and hosting practices. Properly coded, standards-compliant, accessible websites will be friendlier, easier to load, and generally faster than sites that are looser with coding practices. A proper security certificate assures both users and browsers that a domain is valid and well-maintained. Sites like Google, too, will allow you to upload a sitemap in order to help the crawler crawl your pages. Usage of a correct robots.txt file helps, too. SEO tools. Major search engines make free tools available that can help with search engine optimization, among other things. Remember, it's in a search engine's best interest to ensure that results are as accurate as possible. Google offers the Google Search Console, which gives very detailed information about how Google sees your web page. Using the information that the console provides, you can optimize your site in order to obtain a higher ranking. Google Analytics is a free analytics software suite. Analytics, as the term relates to web development, are a set of metrics that give a developer deep insight into how users are interacting with a website. Google Analytics allows a developer to embed a short code into their site's HTML. Then, every time a page on the site is accessed, the Google Analytics tracking is notified. The information obtained by Google Analytics is extraordinarily detailed. A developer can use the tools to determine from where in the world, approximately, a site has been accessed. You can see how long a user was on the site, the sequence of links they clicked on, and the last thing they looked at. You can even track conversions that you define and watch a user's behavior in real time as they look at your site. Microsoft also offers Bing Webmaster Tools, which allows for deep insight into how the popular Bing search engine is interacting with your site. Using these tools is required if you're running a serious website. Developers and webmasters can never have too much information about their users, and the easiest way to gather solid, helpful information is through the tools these search engines provide. There are many other tools, too, browser-specific tools, command line programs, and so on. You'll develop preferences as your needs dictate. SEO is a part of good planning. In order to ensure that your site achieves a good user base, you'll want to start thinking about information architecture and good SEO practices from the beginning. Dynamic content. Some websites use URL parameters in order to render custom search results from databases. URL parameters will typically look something like this. Here we see two parameters, type and color. This URL might be used to query an online clothing shop's database in order to return a page that lists all blue t-shirts in the shop's inventory. This is a very common pattern in website software development. On one hand, this kind of page can be enormously useful, providing an efficient method of rendering custom searches that specifically render relevant results. But because this kind of content is generated with parameters that can take different values, crawlers have a much more difficult time indexing these pages, even though they might be able to generate content that's directly relevant to a user's interests. For these kinds of pages, it's best to keep the number of parameters in the URL to a minimum. One or two is ideal. The more parameters that are used, the more difficult it will be for a crawler to index the dynamic content. On the dynamic pages themselves, make sure the text content is keyword heavy and as descriptive as possible. Finally, search engine sitemaps, lists of pages to index, will help a search engine index the dynamically generated page. Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions, and then review the feedback. Question 1. What is the purpose of search engine optimization? Option 1. To make a website more secure. Incorrect. Security is important, but it isn't the function of SEO. Option 2. To make a website easy to navigate. Incorrect. While easy navigation is important, it isn't related to SEO. Option 3. To make a website appear near the top of the list of hits in a search engine. Correct. It is important to businesses and other website owners that users can easily find their website. Option 4. To make a website project avoid scope creep. Incorrect. Scope creep doesn't have anything to do with SEO. Question 2. Which of these is an example of analytics? Option 1. A list of the geographic locations of website visitors. Correct. This information can help a website better understand who is or is not visiting their website. Option 2. A content map. Incorrect. Content maps are an important development tool, but they aren't considered analytics. Option 3. A wireframe. Incorrect. Wireframes are important development tools, but they aren't part of analytics. Option 4. A crawler. Incorrect. Crawlers are used by search engines to learn about web pages. Question 3. What is the purpose of a crawler? Option 1. To design a web page. Incorrect. Crawlers aren't capable of designing web pages. For that, you need tools such as HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Option 2. To manage a project. Incorrect. Crawlers aren't used in project management, which uses other productivity tools such as software for Gantt charts or spreadsheets. Option 3. To maximize SEO. Close. A crawler helps a search engine figure out what is on a page so the page can be ranked, but the crawler itself isn't a tool for SEO maximization. That requires something like Google Analytics. Option 4. To provide information to search engines. That's right. A crawler crawls the web, gathering information about web pages, which is then given to a search engine so that it can determine how to rank the pages for each search string. Conclusion. Planning and project management are as critical to a project's success as coding. Sometimes project management is even more critical because sites are evolving expressions and software that can be refined over time. But no evolution will happen if the site fails before it's off the ground. For this reason, it's a good idea, whether you're working alone or on a large team, to practice solid scheduling practices, deliverable management, and communications techniques that ensure a project's success. Details about practices like Scrum are beyond the scope of this unit, but they're worth researching and becoming familiar with. There's not much that's better than the feeling of success when a project is launched and a client is impressed. Good planning and project management make those feelings happen more often.